Well, hello everyone, and welcome to a very special show. I know that you all have been expecting for Millennial Woes to be here, but he unfortunately had to cancel because of a very urgent matter. So I'm here to fill in for his place. And what we have in store for tonight is, as I said, something very special. And it's the sort of debate we have all been, I would say, looking forward to, that we knew something like this was on the way at some point. And Greg Johnson and Andrew Anglin are going to debate about the truth about the coronavirus. So is it the real thing? Is it the major thing for humanity? Or is it just the flu blown out of proportion? So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Yes. So we didn't really agree yet as to who goes first, but I would be happy if Andrew wanted to go first. We talked about doing each an opening statement that's no more than 10 minutes, and then we could each give about no more than 5 minutes of rebuttal, and then we would just talk. We would have a conversation amongst ourselves and also answer questions from the chat. Is that all right?
That's fine with me.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
So, Andrew, do you want to go first?
If you would prefer that, that is fine with me, sure.
Sure.
Can we start now?
Yeah.
Okay, well, my position is that it's the flu, and that the response to it, the cure, as it were, is going to cause a lot more problems than the disease. So we have three separate issues going on here, which they kind of all get mixed together. But the issues are the virus itself, the lockdown, and whether or not that makes any sense, whether or not it works. And then you have the fallout from it, which is going to be obviously a total economic collapse. So these are three separate issues that are kind of tied together. I mean, the first one is tied to the second one, is tied to the third one. And it's a question of whether or not it was worth it based on the risks we had. Every year, there are 100 different viruses, over 100 different viruses that cause the flu. And 7 to 15% of those viruses are coronaviruses. They're new every year. So every year these viruses are novel because they go dormant in the winter and then they come back mutated so that they can continue to infect people. So although the flu is obviously named after influenza, the disease of the flu is caused by viruses other than influenza, including 7 to 15%, according to the University of Glasgow, a study that went from 2002 to 2015, with thousands of participants tested, 7 to 15% of the viruses that caused the flu were coronaviruses. COVID-19, as they're calling it now, is the flu. There's nothing different about this virus than the flu. Everything, all the symptoms are the same as the flu. It has the same death rate. They said it was going to be higher, but it's relatively in the same range as the flu as far as the case fatality rate. They said it was going to be higher hospitalizations. That has not happened. They said it was higher complications, and that has not happened. And we kind of knew all this. It was a little bit confusing when this stuff was happening just in China, because there wasn't, you know, straightforward information. China eventually let in the WHO and the American CDC went there eventually, but initially it wasn't really clear. But this was all clear by the time the outbreak had happened in Italy. I think a lot of the freak out over this is that people don't understand how bad the flu is every year. I think that's not really understood. In 2017-18 season, the winter season of that year, 80,000 people died from the flu, and we're not close to that with coronavirus deaths. That's in the United States, 80,000 in the United States, and we're not close to that with coronavirus deaths now. So this disease is not as bad as the flu. It's about in the same range. It's about an average flu season. We also have the issue that, you know, they're counting, well, I'll get to that later, but they're including people in the death toll who probably did not die of coronavirus. But even if their numbers are exactly right, still not that big of a deal. Iceland did tests in early April where they tested 36,000 people, and the case fatality rate was 0.004. Half a percent, 0.5% of the population was infected, and they had seven deaths. So the case fatality rate was 0.004%. So we had that information all the way back in the first week of April. UK did tests. They tested 320,000 people, and they had a CFR of 0.12%. So so you know the case fatality rate of the flu is usually stated as 0.1 to 0.2. All of these numbers are within that margin. Last week, LA County was tested. There were 900 people tested. 5% were infected or had the antibodies, rather. So they had been infected. So that gives LA County a case fatality rate of 0.15%. Again, within the basic margin of the flu here. There were 3,000 people tested in New York last week. 21% of New York was infected and a CFR of 0.059%. I have more of these listed. You can keep going through it, but the point is this is all over the place. It's showing that the case fatality rate is between 0.1% and 0.2%. Sometimes it comes out a little bit higher than that, sometimes a little bit lower. In Iceland, a lot lower, but it's always in that range of the flu. 32% in a Massachusetts town called Chelsea were tested positive for antibodies, and none of them even knew they had it. In Italy, the average, this is the age here, because the flu generally kills old people and people with existing diseases, which is the exact same thing we're seeing with the so-called coronavirus. The average age of death in Italy was 80, and that data hasn't been made public in a lot of places, but it seems to be about that everywhere besides the United States due to the rate of obesity.
Okay, and we are back on air. I'm sorry for the tech issues. As some of you might know, there are some tech works being done right now on DLive, some platform migration, which sometimes leads to these little bugs. So I'm very sorry about this, but let's hope that the broadcast continues without issues from now on. And Andrew, you could maybe backtrack a little to maybe around the point where you were talking about New York and comparing it to Sweden. I think that was around the time when the issue started.
Okay. New York has four times the death toll that Sweden has, which is a huge margin. And New York is kind of the standard for this shutdown, whereas Sweden didn't shut anything down besides, you know, mass gatherings, concerts, and so on. Everything else just went on normally, and they're going to not have the same consequences that the rest of us are going to have economically. There's been 2,200 deaths in Sweden and 17,000 deaths in New York. The population of Sweden is about half of what New York is. So do the math. It comes out to about four times. You can trim that number up a little bit. You can cut it up statistically and say, well, you know, New York is more urbanized and so on. But when you look at upstate New York, where a large percentage of those deaths took place, it's clear that the lockdown itself is increasing the infection rate for the virus, which makes you wonder just what the hell we're doing here. I don't know if we were cut off before I went through talking about China. And well, China shut down one city. Obviously, we know about Wuhan, but they did not shut down anything else. They just told people to wear masks. Korea told people to wear masks. The U.S. Surgeon General told people that they were more likely to get infected if they wore masks. you know, the countries have tested this. It's not a theory that this lockdown doesn't work. It's known that it doesn't work, and it's known that it's increasing the death toll. So I don't know which part I was at here, but the economy is going to collapse. Right now, the White House just announced we have a 17% unemployment rate right now, and this has not even happened yet. I mean, this is going to get a whole lot worse when the businesses open up and people see that there's nobody to service. So 67% of the U.S. economy is service jobs, and I don't see hardly any of those jobs remaining as a result of this shutdown, because the way the economy of the United States works is it's all these moving parts. And if those parts stop, then the whole thing just kind of collapses. There's no base for the economy. It just exists sort of as a floating, moving machine based on the services buying and selling things to each other. So the entire middle class is going to be wiped out. All small businesses are going to be destroyed. You're going to have tens of millions of homeless people with mass drug addiction. Every city is going to look like San Francisco looks like right now, but worse. They're going to legalize these drugs, or, you know, decriminalize heroin, fentanyl, and just let everybody just lay out on the street like they do in San Francisco. This is an apocalypse scenario. You just can't even understand how bad it's going to be. It's going to be beyond anything that we, having grown up in this normal society, what we think of as normal, what we can even imagine. You're going to have mass suicide, and we might end up with a war. That's how we got out of the last Great Depression. They're saying, all the analysts are saying, this is going to be as bad as the Great Depression, but it's actually going to be, you know, just a whole lot worse, unimaginably worse. It's nothing that it's the worst collapse of a society that we've ever seen in history. The fastest. So we gave up all of our freedom. We gave up the Constitution. We collapsed our economy. Nobody's going to have any jobs. And now we know for a fact that the case fatality rate of this disease is it's the same as the flu, between 0.1 and 0.2. So this is all just totally insane.
And I would like to ask you a bit of a background for what you said there, that for example, politicians and the media seem to be very uniformly in the opinion that this is a big deal. So where do you think it comes from? That why are they saying so?
Well, they appear to have some agenda here. I think that probably collapsing the middle class is part of the agenda. I think that they want a society that's totally locked down, where people don't have any freedom. And I think for the media has been really the driving force behind this, more so even than the governments, they're using it to attack Donald Trump. I mean, the U.S. media is obsessed with attacking Donald Trump, and he said that it was just the flu. So they've gone all out. And I think they believe that if the economy collapses, they'll be in a better position to win the election in November. I think that's what's happening. And I think there's a, you know, whatever you want to say, an agenda from the elite to push a certain new type of society using this virus, where we're going to end up with more world government and with less freedom, and with kind of the countries of the world getting combined together is what I see happening. I mean, and this is kind of being discussed openly by Bill Gates and others in the globalist community.
And from that, we could move to Greg. I remember we talked about this coronavirus situation somewhat on our show a couple of weeks ago, but maybe you could now elaborate what your view about this is.
Okay, yeah, let me just set my timer. I don't want to go on too long. Okay, the coronavirus pandemic, I think, is a serious problem. And I want to talk about it in three steps. I want to address the question of what kind of virus it is. Then I want to talk about the measures that have been taken to limit the spread of the virus. And finally, I want to talk about the consequences that we're all going to face. I'm going to follow the same basic outline that Andrew laid out. I first heard about coronavirus back in December of last year when it was breaking out in China. And at that time, I already started seeing people in my social media sphere, people like Ramsey Paul, for instance, who were coming up with a particular line about this, that this is just like the flu. Now, the claim that coronavirus is just like the flu isn't a scientific claim. Okay, coronavirus is a kind of SARS, a severe acute respiratory syndrome. It's a different disease. It spreads like the flu, but a lot of diseases spread like it. It's a kind of SARS, but the claim that it is a flu is not based on science. It's based on a policy agenda, because the flu is something that's already part of the plan. We have flus every winter. We lose 10 or 20 or 30 or 50,000 people in the United States every year from the flu. And we think that's normal. That's the normal situation for Americans. And if you claim that this virus, which was still just confined in China, is just like the flu, you're using an analogy to push a particular policy agenda. And that agenda is to do nothing, out of the ordinary. However, COVID-19, coronavirus, SARS is not just the flu. For one thing, the flu is something that there's widespread immunity to. The flu is something that we have vaccines for. And there is a pressure every year for older people, people in high-risk categories, to get the flu vaccine. So we actually do things for the flu that we couldn't do for coronavirus. We couldn't pressure old people to get vaccines, for instance. We couldn't count on a certain amount of pre-given immunity. But still, the desire was to have nothing done, specifically to not limit the movement of goods and people in the global economy. Now, why was this the preferred policy? Well, there are two basic reasons for this. And when you see somebody like Ramsey Paul saying this, the underlying assumption probably is that he's an ideological libertarian type, basically. And the ideological libertarians, and I won't use Ramsey Paul because there are people who are just outright libertarian. So let's just say the libertarian individualist types, they don't recognize that there are collective problems that need collective solutions and that the government is the natural tool for enforcing these things. They want to deny the existence of such problems. Why? Because their worldview, their political policies, their preferences go out the window when there's an epidemic. So what do they say? Well, it's just like the flu, which means the government doesn't need to do anything special to stop this. Republicans were going with this claim. But, you know, it wasn't just it was a bipartisan consensus in America. On the 1st of February, the Washington Post, which is an ultra-liberal media outlet owned by Jeff Bezos, said, "Get a grip, America. The coronavirus is no worse than the flu, or the flu is a bigger problem than the coronavirus." We had left-wing, left-of-center, multicultural globalist types saying, "Hug a Chinaman. The worst thing is a stigma. The worst thing is racism. This minor virus thing, it's like the flu. Racism is far worse." We had the government of New York City, which is now the worst hit city in the world, saying, "Don't be afraid of going to Chinatown. Don't be afraid of going to Chinese New Year." This was a bipartisan consensus in the United States. For the people on the right, basically, they didn't want to upset the shoppers. They didn't want to impede economic activity. For the people on the left, they didn't want to be racist. But the common denominator of both is do nothing that impedes the free movement of goods and people in the global economy, because we have a globalist establishment. Left and right, they're globalist. Now, this agenda has basically given rise to a whole web of rationalizations, irrelevancies, and so forth that I don't want to dispute. I don't want to go into any of that. We have to understand the root of this analogy. It was not based on science, but based on a policy preference. Now, who did we consult with? Who laid down the idea that this was just the flu and should be treated like the flu? Did we go to scientists? No, we didn't go to scientists. Did we go to elder statesmen? Did we go to wise men? Did we go to the Dalai Lama? Did we go to moral philosophers? No, the people who wanted this policy enacted are billionaires, Jewish hedge fund owners, Jeff Bezos, and Donald Trump, because Donald Trump was running on a platform of the stock market is up and black unemployment is down. He was betting everything on good economic news in his re-election bid. And so everybody had an incentive to run with this narrative, which was based only on policy preferences, not on anything else. Now, I want to address briefly just the idea that lockdowns and other social distancing measures didn't help. Basic epidemiology is this. You can stop an epidemic with the first person. The first person gets sick and the epidemic doesn't happen. How? If it is not transmitted to a second person and a third person. If you can get the first sick person and isolate them until they die or till they get well, the epidemic is nipped in the bud. If there is no contact between people, the epidemic does not spread. Now, as soon as I started hearing about this SARS outbreak in China, where the number of dead and the number of people who were cleared and said to be healthy was almost the same at the beginning. And there are people saying, oh, the mortality rate is probably very tiny. The mortality rate at the beginning was 50%. And right now, the number of cleared cases in the United States versus the number of dead, we have 29% of the closed cases are dead in the United States. That's about the same as we have in Spain. It's about the same that we have in Italy. That is a tremendously high rate of death. And this is with modern medicine. Now, if you look at the Black Death killed about 40 or 50% of people, depending on the article you read. And that was in the Middle Ages without modern medicine. We have something that's killing 30% of the people when the cases are closed. That is a very serious problem. And yet I was seeing all this denialism, this dismissal. It was ideologically and politically and financially motivated denial. If you break contacts between people, it will not spread. You can quibble about why is it different in New York versus different in Sweden. That's fine. Sure. But the point is that if something is done to break contacts between people, the virus will not spread. As soon as I started hearing about this, I started socially distancing. It comes easy to me, right? But I started socially distancing. By mid-February, I had stopped doing a lot of things. And a lot of people were doing that. They were responding to this earlier than the governments were. Now, the best response to this would have been a quick shutdown for the United States, for instance, or any other country, an immediate shutdown of travel from China. That would have been the best thing to do. And if we had done that in the United States, we might have about as many dead people as they have in Taiwan, which did that very quickly. Because the United States basically has a joke of a government and a populace that consists of whining individualists and very selfish people, we were paralyzed in the face of this. We wanted commerce, we wanted parties, we wanted March Madness, we weren't going to stay at home, and we are suffering terribly for this. So that's my basic statement about this. As far as the economic consequences go, I would simply say this. Once the virus spread around the United States, there was really only two choices. A lot of people would die if it was allowed to go unimpeded, and then we would have an economic collapse, or fewer people would die due to mitigation measures, and those mitigation measures would have severe economic consequences. We are going to suffer severe economic consequences because we didn't have a serious government that would nip this in the bud. And that's very unfortunate. But I still think that by mitigation, by limiting the spread of the virus, we are going to have far less deadly consequences, not only to the public health, but to the economy as a whole.
And before we move into the rebuttals, you could both clarify your positions in one sense that because this is a very complicated topic and few people really have extreme opinions about this. If we categorize the extremes such that zero is the person who doesn't even think that the coronavirus is a real virus, that it actually exists, and believes that this is all just a very very big hoax. And then at the other extreme, at 10, you would have the person who basically thinks that this is the end of the world and we are all going to die. And most people would fall somewhere in the middle, that they say that, okay, I think this is a serious thing, but I'm also concerned about the economy or things like that. So what are the positions you think that you could say you agree with the other side about? And maybe starting with Andrew.
Well, I certainly agree that we should have closed the border with China immediately. And I think that it's okay to wear masks. I don't think the masks are a bad idea, especially, you know, when we didn't know what was happening. And I think that quarantining the those who are at risk, this is all fine. Maybe it's stuff we should be doing for the flu. So I don't think taking basic precautions is the same thing as just totally collapsing the economy and causing this complete disaster.
And Greg, what are the points here you from Andrew you would agree about, or with the people who say that this is just a flu? Because I think that there must be some things that you find like common concerns between the both of you. What would you say are those points?
Well, look, I think that we could have done a lot better job to mitigate this early on. And if you look at countries like New Zealand or Taiwan, they seem to have avoided the worst of this. Now, there might be other reasons besides policies why this happened. This virus seems to be mutating at an absolutely fearsome rate. There are now, I think, more than 30 different strains of it. And the differences between these strains is remarkable. I read today, I think it was in an Intelligencer piece, that the viral load levels that they're finding with different strains vary as much as by a factor of 270, which is immense. So this is a new frontier in terms of virology. It's not something that we're familiar with. There are consequences to people's organs, liver, lungs, brain, and things like that. It's having effects on all different parts of the body. So it's remarkably varied, and that might explain some of the variations in effects, because there are different founder populations, right? Different strains of the virus moving around. It's mutating rapidly. But the point is that reducing contact works. And if we had sensible government policy, we could have done this in a much less harmful way, in a much more surgical way. I agree with that completely. What I don't agree with, though, is allowing us to accept this framing by the oligarchy in America, basically, that this is a flu, so we do nothing. In their heart of hearts, their attitude was, this is like schoolgirls being raped by Pakistanis in England. This is like the opioid epidemic. This is like all these people committing suicide because their jobs and their livelihoods and their communities have been destroyed by globalization, all these deaths of despair. Our government doesn't want to do anything about those either. It's part of the plan. It's a feature, not a bug of their system. They don't want to do anything about this either, right? They ended up doing something about it simply because they realized, oh my God, this is not a problem for working class white people. It's not those people's problem. This is our problem. They acted on this because they realized this virus hits the cosmopolitan elites first and hardest. It hits people who spend all their time flying around the world on airplanes, pressing the flesh, shaking hands, going to sporting events and operas and ballets and things like that where you're close to a lot of other people. It hits urbanites more than ruralites. It was hitting the elites. And isn't it interesting how quickly the policies did a 180 in the UK from let the herd, you know, get immune to we need to stop this when Boris Johnson, the prime minister, is in intensive care. This is threatening to the elites, and that is why they went into this reaction, which in some ways has been excessive and stupid. But they care about this because it's killing them, not just the little people. So anyway, but I do think that we share a common sense that this was massively bungled. I also think we share a common sense that this is obviously being exploited by evil people. When Henry Kissinger, who's what, 96 years old, comes out and says the answer to this is more globalism, or Bill Gates or these megalomaniacs, right? We know that they're just trying to exploit this for all it's worth, but it doesn't mean that it's not a real problem. It's a real problem that's being exploited. That's a real problem. The response to it has been bungled. And the response has been bungled to the extent that our society is liberal in its assumptions, globalist in its economy, democratic in its form of government, so that everybody thinks very short term. And I've laid this out in an article called How Coronavirus Changes the World. This virus surgically attacks all the weaknesses of the establishment in the West. And this is why they have reacted to it with such flailing fear after basically just trying to minimize it for a long time.
And now that I think we have a pretty clear idea about what both of you believe in and what you don't, we could move on to the rebuttals. But just before that, I could remind the audience that if you want to ask questions of our debaters here, you can send your super chats to entropy stream .live /countercurrents, and the URL is there on the screen too. So send your questions there. But now to the rebuttal. So starting with Andrew, what would you say to Greg's points, especially those where your differences were the starkest, like the effects of lockdown measures?
I don't think that all that stuff Greg said about a theory about why they're doing this is really, or why they weren't going to do it. And then they just, I don't think that's relevant. We can come up with all kinds of different theories about things. And what matters is the data. And what matters is that they told us that 2.2 million people were going to die. And then they told us that between 100 and 220,000 people were going to die. And we're now looking at a normal flu season. So we have to look at the data. We have to look at the numbers. The only number that I heard Greg say was 29% of people that visit the hospitals. But this is not a – no, I don't think that's of people. I don't know where that number came from. But it's not the real – what you have to look at is the case fatality rate, the total infections as the numerator, and as the denominator, the deaths. So you have to do that math equation to find out, you know, what kind of a problem this disease is. And we've done that. They've done it all over the world. And we found that it's the same as the flu. So the stuff about the libertarianism and not wanting to, the elite don't want it. Who knows? I mean, the elite did it. This happened. I mean, it's happened. Did they worry about it affecting them? I mean, are they worried about the flu? It's the same thing as the flu. All the data says that the death toll is the same. And the thing about that is they've removed all the flu deaths. The CDC has stopped recording flu deaths now. So all those deaths are getting included in the coronavirus death toll. And I think that, you know, the people that get coronavirus, that actually get it, the CDC has a policy now of not testing people and just recording their deaths as coronavirus deaths because they're trying to inflate these numbers as much as they can. But the actual coronavirus deaths, because I'm not a coronavirus denier. I believe this is a virus like the 100 other viruses that cause the flu every year. And the people who die from that probably would have died from a different version of the flu. There's no evidence that it kills, that it targets any population. I mean, we've had what, 3 or 4 child deaths and in the United States, and in 2018 there were 160 child deaths. Last year there were 100 and something, 105, I think, in 2018-19 season. So, I mean, children are not dying of it. All indications are that it's actually a pretty mild flu, and these numbers that we're seeing are inflated, and they're exaggerated because of the way this lockdown has maximized the infection rate by sending people to the grocery store where the virus can spread uninhibited, where any virus, the other flu viruses as well, can spread uninhibited, and then sending people, locking them in their home, which is where any respiratory virus actually spreads, is inside the home from person to person. That's where upwards, with other research on the flu, that's upwards of 85% of cases are spread within the home, because that's when you're locked in with somebody, and in the cold months you're breathing the same air. If you would have let people outside to go around, you would have had a lower infection rate. So Greg said that the libertarians don't want the government to solve problems, but he also said the government is stupid and incompetent and so on. So giving them this amount of control, I mean, the governor of New Jersey told Tucker Carlson that when he took away everybody's rights, which is what they've done, I mean, all of our constitutional rights, all of our just basic assumed rights as human beings have been removed from us. And the governor said to Tucker Carlson, the governor of New Jersey said, we were not thinking about the Bill of Rights when we did this. So that's the level of problem it is. It's like we were invaded by aliens or something, where the Bill of Rights, our freedoms, anything, our humanity is just thrown out the window, because this is just that big of a problem. Which, I mean, I don't think that there is any problem that is that big. I think if we were invaded by aliens, we would still need to think about people's rights and their humanity. But if you're gonna agree that the government is incompetent, I think the government is evil, to turn over all this power to them, it doesn't make any coherent sense. And their plan of action is insane. Like I say, telling people to lock themselves in their homes while allowing them to go to the grocery store, while telling them that they're more likely to get the virus if they're wearing masks, is lunacy. So, if I had to come up with a conspiracy theory on why they didn't freak out to begin with, I would say that they wanted the virus to spread in the United States so that they could push this agenda. Because, I mean, you see what they're doing. They're not trying to lift this. It's over. I mean, even if it was real to begin with, it's over now. And they're not trying to lift this. The BRICS, Madam BRICS came out and said that we're going to go through summer. And Bill Gates is saying that we're going to go through till 2022. And they're coming out with these crazy, we're going to just stay locked down forever. So clearly that's their agenda, to create an entire new society. So if they were saying it wasn't a big deal back in February, I think, you know, if you wanted to come up with a theory about this instead of just looking at the data, which again, like I say, I think the only thing you can do is look at the data. But if you wanted to come up with a theory, then I would say that it's certainly possible that they wanted the virus to spread before they started freaking out. Because if they would have started freaking out back in January, then we would have closed the border earlier and we wouldn't have this problem now, which the cases, I mean, as far as you can believe these people, I mean, they're not honest, these virologists, but as far as you can believe them, the strain that's in the United States came from Europe. So the logical thing would have been in January, when as soon as Wuhan happened, as soon as they closed down Wuhan, the logical thing would have just been to close the borders completely, other than for you know, container ships and so on that are going to have a low chance of carrying it. But as far as people just flying in on airplanes, we had flights coming in from Wuhan airport. I still don't even understand how this was possible, but we had flights coming in from Wuhan International Airport after Wuhan was locked down. So this is how competent the government is, that you want to just give over all your rights and freedoms and everything to just put them in total control, because we're now going to be relying on the government to feed us. That's the situation we're in, because we're not, I mean, they said now that by the end of the week, the grocery stores are going to be out of fresh meat. And they said, oh, don't worry. We still have frozen meat. We can feed you frozen meat, but there's no new meat coming in. So what are we going to eat? I mean, we're at the point now where we could be facing hunger in the United States. And the only people that we're going to rely on, because we gave them total control of everything, is the U.S. federal government. And I don't want to be in that position, but I am. We all are now. This is our lives.
Right. Yeah, well, government is the only way to deal with collective problems, collective emergencies like this. And you better pray that you've got a good government. Now, the people in Taiwan lucked out. They had a good government. New Zealand had a decent government. Hungary, smart government. The other V4 countries, they took action fairly quickly. The point is that this is the sort of problem, this is the sort of emergency that only collective action by the state can solve. And you have to, at that point, pray that the people who run your government aren't complete idiots. Unfortunately, our government is run by idiots, basically. And I'm not even exempting the president, even though I have a certain amount of affection for the guy. And I think he's probably the best of a bad lot. But this whole thing was massively botched. It's unfortunate. And we're going to be, America has become hollowed out and weakened over the years. It's got serious, serious problems. This is the stress test that might just shatter it. And it's very unfortunate for all of us who are going to be wandering around in the ruins, right? But the fact is that this is the sort of problem that only governments can solve if you are lucky enough to have a good government. Now, I just want to say a couple things in response to the things that Andrew said. First of all, these projections, 2 million dead, 200,000 dead, these are projections that take this form. If we do nothing, we could have up to 2 million dead. If we do nothing, we can have up to 200,000 dead. But they were doing things, right? They were mitigating. And it was before the government even started having policies, germaphobes like me were mitigating, okay? Now, the fact is that mitigation by reducing contact with other people works, because viruses only spread through contact with other people. Now, you can say that the lockdowns are making it worse. Why? Because people are spending time in grocery stores and spending time with people at home. I would say no. The lockdowns are making it better, because now, instead of spending time in gyms, movie theaters, shopping malls, and so forth, and as well as the grocery store and at home, people are just going to the grocery store and going home. they're eliminating huge amounts of contact with other people. And by eliminating contact with other people, you reduce the spread of these viruses. So the fact that these projections have been modified down should be the people who made these projections are delighted to be wrong, right? They're saying we could have 2 million people dead in the United States if we do nothing. Thank God we've done something. And therefore, we're going to have fewer deaths. Now, the deaths, I'm just looking at this little counter on worldometers.info. We are up to nearly 57,000 deaths right now. More than a million cases, 56,933 deaths, 139,419 recovered. Of the closed cases, 29% of those have been deaths. And there are nearly 800,000 cases that aren't closed yet. And if those 800,000 cases close at the 29% death rate, that death number is going to be very, very high, right? It's going to be close to, it's going to be in the 300,000 dead range. And that's assuming that nobody else gets sick in the United States from today forward. That's not going to happen. People are still going to get sick. Even if this is slowing down, people are still going to get sick. So we have a catastrophic problem, and that problem would have been much worse if we had done nothing.
And Andrew, I could ask you a question is there a scenario that would make you change your mind? Like, is there a death count we could reach that would get you to change your view and decide that, okay, this was a big deal after all, and this is not just a flu? So what would be the requirements for that?
Okay, first I just want to correct Greg. The 2.2 million was without any measures, and the 100,000 to 220,000 was with the measures. They prescribed these exact measures that we've undergone, and they said with those measures, it would be 100,000 to 220,000. That was the chart shown at the White House by Bricks and Fauci on, I believe it was March 31st.
Well, we're so, on our way to those levels and higher.
I guess we'll see.
Go ahead.
What would give me a change my mind? Well, as far as this level of surrender, of total surrender of all basic control of people's lives to the government, I would rather have the 2.2 million, you know, obese and elderly people die. I don't think that there is any possible justification for surrendering, you know, total control of people's lives, collapsing the economy, and putting this many people out of work. I just don't think there is a number that would justify that. You know, if we had a government that was, you know, run by the people, and we had, you know, millions of people dying, and they were honest about it. I mean, that's what I don't believe. I mean, Greg, these people are getting money for this. They want as many people. I mean, when you watch Bill Gates talk, if you believe this guy doesn't want the most deaths he can get out of this, then I don't know what to tell you. But he does not seem like a person with very good intentions to me. But you know, if we had a government that was not this corrupt and just kind of evil, you know, I could see going along in the case of a real pandemic. You know, even if they would have, in the first thing, they would have said, okay, everybody has to wear masks, which is what China did, and they were saying that China was oppressive. They were saying China is no freedom. The media was saying this because they were arresting people for not wearing masks. Well, now in the United States, you get arrested if you are wearing a mask for talking to somebody. I think that the masks were a potential solution when it was early on and we didn't have this data. And I mean, maybe we should wear masks all flu season long, just as a normal measure. I think that people who are susceptible to the disease should. I mean, whether or not, because again, the overwhelming majority of these deaths are people who are elderly, and whether or not they even want to stay alive is a question. And when you see people like Rahm Emanuel's brother, what's his name, Ezekiel Emanuel, going up there and saying, you know, we have to take care of these people in their 80s. This was the guy who came up with the Obamacare death panels that you know, was saying that we have to end of life care because it's too expensive and we just have to let old people die. So now all of a sudden he cares about, these old people dying of the flu. This is clearly some kind of agenda going on here. So I don't think that there's anything that would make me want to allow this kind of control to be turned over to the government, because they're not going to give us back any of our rights. They like this. They're going to keep it like this. And this is just like we're not getting our jobs back. This is the life we're going to live now. I mean, probably they'll introduce some kind of new currency for the, some kind of new global government system in response to this. This is the crisis that they've been talking about since, the late 1800s to create a global government system. I mean, that's what we're witnessing unfold here.
And the same goes for you, Greg, that do you think there is a scenario that would make you change your stance about this? Let's say that suddenly all of this goes away and it turns out that, for example, the economic consequences end up being deadlier than the disease. So do you see that sort of scenario existing?
Yeah, I mean, there could be a solution that's worse than the problem. There's no question about it. That doesn't mean that it's not a problem. It just means that the solution turned out to be worse than the problem because it was massively bungled. We know that there have been solutions. There have been governments that have put in place policies that have been very successful. For instance, Taiwan, New Zealand. These countries acted well. And I applaud them. Hungary acted well. Slovakia, the Czech Republic, Poland acted well. And unfortunately, other countries didn't. It tends to be the more liberal, the more globalist, the more multicultural a country it is, that they where things get bungled. And I totally sympathize with Andrew and a lot of people who say, why do we trust the government? Why do we trust the media? This is a real problem. There's no question that it's a real problem. In Western Europe, our governments tell us that diversity is our strength, that race is a social construct, that everybody's equal, that we've got to give all of our freedom over to some unelected international elite because of global warming. They tell us all this stuff that we rightly suspect is bullshit. So why don't we just dismiss this in the same way, right? I mean, I understand, I sympathize with that. And this is just a symptom of the corruption of liberal democracy and globalization and multiculturalism. It destroys trust. The fact that we have elites that are not organically connected to the people they rule over, but are actually committed to race replacement immigration, to slow genocide of their own populations, doesn't exactly make us trust them when they talk about doing what's good for us. Okay. I totally get that. But there are countries in the world that don't suffer from that problem. And it turns out that they're taking precautions, and they actually took precautions more quickly with less terrible consequences. And so the great lesson here is it's the same lesson we've been preaching all along. We have to overthrow our governments and replace them. We have to replace our governing elites before they replace us. We need populist changes, radical populist changes in North America, in Western Europe, and so forth. And this crisis is a wonderful argument for that. And I want to make that the argument, that the lesson that we draw from this, not talking about freedom, right? That's libertarian stuff. That's mainstream conservative stuff. That's Koch brothers stuff. Let's talk about how this supports the national populist cause. And I would like all the people who are listening to this to basically pull together and push that agenda. I think that is the important agenda. That's the important lesson that we can get out of this. And believe me, we have to do this because we have people like Bill Gates and Henry Kissinger who are saying the only solution to this is more of the globalist poison that's destroying us. We have to stop these people. We have to prevent these people from making a bad situation worse.
And Andrew, do you have a commentary to that specific point?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I've got a lot of commentary here. Greg said that the mitigation works. That's a point that I want to speak to because it doesn't seem to be working. I mean, what he laid out was the concept of quarantine. And if anybody Googles Africa Ebola quarantine, you can see what an actual quarantine looks like. The global health organizations went to Africa to deal with this Ebola, and it's people in hazmat suits, people in these plastic houses. They build houses out of plastic, use a lot of plastic. And I'm not a big fan of plastic, but it's a very good sealant, and it's very easy to clean. So there's a lot of plastic. That's what a real quarantine looks like. What we have is just a joke where there's 6 feet. Where did this come from? Nobody knows. Don't wear masks. The Surgeon General says you can get the virus easier if you're wearing a mask. 21% of New York City is infected. I don't know. Once you get to the level of 21%, where can you, what is the point of trying to prevent it at that point? I mean, you've already lost the game. When you have 21% of the people have been infected with the virus, you're already at the point of no return. And this happened in the crazy kook Cuomo world where they did a total lockdown and just destroyed everything. So, you know, the mitigation doesn't work, at least not as it's being employed. Quarantine obviously works, but they didn't do that. I mean, they just as easily could have done that with all they've done. As far as the freedom doesn't matter, I mean, I don't really know what that even means. I mean, I understand that people can make fun of you know, boomers talking about their freedoms and my freedoms and so on. I mean, there's a lot of memes with fat boomers talking about freedoms, but I mean, you don't want to have no freedom. I mean, freedom is not bad. Freedom is something that you require as a society. You don't want less freedom. You especially don't want less freedom when your government is run by Jews, which is what we have, and they're not they don't have good intentions. So the idea that, you know, we should laugh at freedom and just turn over all of our freedoms to the Jews doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I mean, I understand you can, like I say, you can make fun of boomers who will say, well, I don't care about what color you are as long as you believe in the Constitution and this type of stuff. But to go in the opposite direction of just like, well, we should just give all our freedoms to the government. I mean, this becomes schizophrenic, especially when you're saying this is the same government who did this. All these problems that we have were caused by the government. I mean, they were at least implemented by the government. So that we're now saying, well, we can trust him on this, but Greg isn't even saying that he does trust him on this. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, when you've got a problem like an epidemic, you're going to need some kind of state policy to do things like close borders, enforce quarantines, examine travelers when they're coming back and forth. These are all things that the state does. Now, the state can do it well or it can do it badly, but these are the kinds of things that states do, and they all have the power to do that. Even the most liberal democratic society has emergency powers up their sleeve to do things like this. It's unfortunate that America has bungled it so badly. That's a legitimate role of the government. And we shouldn't be arguing about whether this is a legitimate role of the government. I think that's a paradigm, a model of a legitimate government activity. The only question is, did they do it well or badly? And they obviously did it badly. Why did they do it badly? Because the elites don't represent the masses. because the elites are corrupt, because they're stupid. We need new elites. We need better elites. That should be the argument that we're having. That's the message that I think we should all be pushing. That's the lesson we should try and get the world to learn from this. It's a nuanced thing, maybe, but I don't agree with the sort of knee-jerk, don't tread on me kind of stuff in a circumstance where you actually have legitimate government action. It's actually legitimate in this particular circumstance. And I'm not a big government lover. I think government should be almost a night watchman state. But this is a kind of circumstance where it's quite legitimate. And we shouldn't be having this argument. We should be having arguments of a different sort that I think are more productive. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you can say that the government theoretically has this role and you know, but whatever. We don't have a theoretical government. We have the government we have right now, which has just gone insane. And all these people are doing all this like signaling. I mean, you have 91 people dead in Oregon, and the Oregon woman governor is going on Twitter lecturing people about how they need to stand further away from each other. I mean, 91 dead in Oregon. We can do some numbers here. There were 567 in the 2017 flu season. So that's before the big one in 2018. 567 dead in Oregon. There are 91 dead from the coronavirus, allegedly, and the governor is dancing around making this big show of how much she cares and how she loves people, and everybody just needs to be good boys. You gotta behave yourselves, boys. Can't stand next to each other, can't go outside. So I mean, you have all these just corrupt and weird, stupid people running the government. The theoretical situation where we have a better government, would you feel comfortable if we had a better government? I don't think there's an issue with this virus unless you're going to apply it to the flu, and because it's the same. And if you were going to do that, and you had a good government that was good people who really cared about the people. And we're just, you know, they were you, and they represent you, and they just want what's best. They wouldn't have done this. You wouldn't have Oregon and, you know, these states in the South, you know, the Midwest. You wouldn't have all these places shut down like this. No government could think it made sense to totally collapse the economy. You could only do this out of maliciousness. They knew what was going to happen. And if they cared about stopping the virus, and they really thought it was as bad as you think it is, Greg, they would have told people to wear masks, and they would have banned, you know, big concerts and big, you know, social gatherings, but they would not have told everybody to stop working, including the people at the meat plants. So we're not going to have any food. This is not what you would do. This is not what anybody would do if they were good folks. So yeah, I believe we need, I mean, you know, this is something that we both talk about a lot, that we need a better government. Absolutely. Yeah. We need a better government, but we don't have that.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I do want to interject here is that the people who claim that this is all about asserting tyranny, I think they're slightly wrong about this for a very simple reason. What's normal in America is a kind of soft tyranny. When you are shopping and working and going to sports, you're all under a kind of soft tyranny. The system wants you to consume. They want you to vote. They want you to go to the beach. They want you to do all these things. They're just as in control when you're quote unquote free and going about your normal business as they are when this is happening. And believe me, the people, the billionaires, the oligarchs, these people have lost a lot of money. Their lives are in chaos as well. I mean, the only people I think who are really just rubbing their hands together in glee over this are probably people like Henry Kissinger and Bill Gates. They think, finally, you know, this is an opportunity for their Dr. Strangelove kind of plans to come to fruition. But for the most part, nobody's getting anything out of this in a concrete sense. the system isn't any stronger now than it was before this happened. In fact, it's weaker because it's being stress tested and parts are flying off. And yeah, they're going to have a terrible depression on their hands. And during depressions, well, we saw what happened during the Great Depressions in the 1920s and 1930s. There was a lot of political instability. They're not relishing this. I don't think they're relishing this. I think they panicked into this because they realized this wasn't just going to kill ordinary white people. It was going to kill them if they didn't try and stop it. It was not going to hit Appalachia. It's hitting New York City. Okay. These people don't care if nuclear bombs fall in Appalachia, but they are damn concerned about deadly viruses spreading around New York City because that's where they live. That's the global capital. It's certainly America's real capital, right? That's where they live. This got them where they lived. They panicked. It was too late to do anything really effective to stop it. And they're just fudging their way through this, and they're hoping that they can pull something out and hold on to power. I think that we have to focus on the message that this has happened because these people need to be swept out of power. It's a great lesson to learn from this. I want people to carry that lesson forward.
Well, there's a soft tyranny and there's a hard tyranny. So I think they are different, and I think that you don't really want to transform from a soft tyranny into a hard tyranny, because we're going to be in a situation where anybody can be rounded up secretly. This is going to be total lawlessness under a permanent virus regime. People are going to be forced vaccinated. We don't know what that's going to do. They haven't been able to come up with a vaccine for SARS or MERS, which are two other coronaviruses, respiratory viruses. Coronaviruses, very similar to this current coronavirus. And they haven't come up with the vaccine for those. And that, I mean, SARS was in 2002. And they, you know, they have infinity money. These viral research facilities get infinity money. And they can't come up with a vaccine for that. So what's going to be in this vaccine that they say is going to be out in a year? And what are they going to do? Are they going to make people get computer chips? They're saying everybody has to be vaccinated and you have to have a way to prove it. And they're saying you're going to have ID cards that say you're vaccinated. Are they going to stop at that? Because, you know, you can say, well, I'm afraid of the vaccine. I'm going to fake an ID card. This is what they'll come out and say, or I'm going to use a friend's ID card, to go wherever you want to go. I mean, probably if you want to buy something, if you want to go into a store, you're going to have a computer chip and there's going to be scanners on everything. So, I mean, like you said, I think that people in the kind of middle management of the system are not any more happy about this than any of the rest of us, this whole economic collapse. But as you also said, this technocratic globalist elite is happy about it. And they are going to use this to roll out a system which is going to be utterly bizarre and oppressive. And our, you know, this stuff that we do on the internet, this is not going to go on. I mean, we're talking about a real tyranny. I mean, it's different when you have a subliminal tyranny that's like, you know, the what's that ratty part? They Live, where you put the glasses on and you see that everything says consume and so on. I mean, you do have that. You have a propaganda regime that where everything's kind of fake and people think they're making their own choices, but really they're influenced by advertisement and so on. Okay, you have that kind of a tyrannical system, but to change into something where there's military on the streets and you're not allowed to go outside and there's no, you know, constitutional rights at all. You can't, there's no freedom of speech. You're not even allowed to talk to people. You know, they're shutting down churches. So Christianity has already been de facto banned, which, you know, you wonder why they want to do that. Especially when I still don't understand what the difference between a church and a grocery store is, but, you know, I,
well, I you, think you gotta eat. And you can pray to God anywhere, right? But you got to go to a grocery store and get some food.
Well, all that they've done, why can't they have delivery trucks? Or look, what they were doing at the paint store and I think they were doing this other places too, but they were having people pull up in the parking lot, and then somebody would come out in a full mask, you know, like an N95, which if this was a real pandemic, they'd be wearing hazmat suits. But they're, you know, this was at the paint store, which the grocery store could do, where you pull up and you give some guy your order and he comes out, you know, they load it onto your car for you. You don't go in and crowd in a supermarket. With all we've done, this is going to cost $50 trillion. And it's, but the numbers become irrelevant because the dollar is going to collapse. There's right. virtually no way that you can print this much money, but we're talking about $50 trillion. So with those numbers, if it was you, you might as well have just done delivery food and have people pull up in the parking lot, set up drive-throughs in the parking lot, you know, this type of thing. We're now
well, there are some stores that are doing that where or you know, you okay, can pick your all. Food. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think people are moving in that direction. Hey, I have a few entropy chats here, and I think it's time to shill for people. You know, if you want to do super chats, go to the entropy link and donate some money. We're only in this for the money, right? We've had only four chats come in, so I want to thank.
Are they going through DLive?
Well, we're getting. I'm doing it through Entropy, the chats that I'm getting, but I'm sure people are doing these. Honestly, I'm so new to DLive that I'm not sure really what these tokens mean. But anyway, let me go through these first, and then we can look at other chats because I don't want to run out of time. Kelvin sent in $3. Thank you, Kelvin. Freddie wrote in, sent in 10 euros. Looking forward to watch a fair debate. GM sent in two $3 donations, and his question is, when can we expect Towards a New Nationalism and other titles to be released as audiobooks? That's a good question. I'm hoping to do that later in the year. But we've been hit so badly by deplatforming that we can't sell our books with credit cards, much less sell audiobooks with credit cards. So we've you know, sort of stepped down our production of those sorts of things. Sorry to interrupt
Who
you.
Who is running your chat? All my people said they're getting banned from the chat.
I don't know.
I mean, they're probably is it inappropriate is it, thing for yeah. this context.
I guess, is that Full Moon? Is he running the chat?
Yeah, it seems so.
Okay. Yes. So anyway, I guess he is... banning people for saying inappropriate things, Fed posty things, or whatever.
Probably not Fed posty, but
okay.
Okay, that's what it is. Well, I guess.
Could you? Okay, let me just say, could you lighten up a little on the chatters then? If they're saying Fed posty stuff, all well and good. But
and now that there are around 3,000 people there, I also should remind them to follow the channel on DLive so that you get the notifications for upcoming live streams too, and stay informed about what is going on the channel. To talk about this topic of tonight, Andrew, what do you think about this thing that Greg sort of brought up, that usually the elites and what their motivations are, it all goes back to cash and making money and turning people into consumers, and they were already very well on track with that, and it seems that this coronavirus has been a major disruption for them in that, and limiting people's ability to act as consumers and to disrupt that behavior seems that it would be more of a nuisance for them than it would be for most people, because their livelihood and their power is dependent on this. So what do you think about that as a criticism or about the theory that there is this agenda and that the elite is somehow profiting from the coronavirus?
Well, I mean, you can come up with theories about anything, but yeah, I mean, I think they liked to have people working and making money. That's a middle management, you know, agenda of the globalist system. But I think, you know, they wanted a new type of society. I think that they want to wipe out white people. And what they've done with this is in one fell swoop, they've destroyed the entire white middle class. You're not going to have, I mean, what our birth rate was already not very good at all before this happened. And you're going to bring that down to just about zero. And, not literally zero, but something close to it. And non-white people will continue to breed. They always continue to breed under any circumstances. I mean, you look at Africa is not really doing all that well. And those people continue to breed at an astonishing rate. In fact, you know, the whole theory about developing, quote unquote, developing countries is that if you give them a better quality of life, they'll breed less, because that's what allegedly happened to white people. I mean, that's sort of isolating one factor in a way that doesn't really make sense. But that is the theory, that the more financial problems people have, the more they breed. So this is going to basically eliminate white people. Most, as we know, white people are very drawn to these opioid drugs, and that's going to be a big thing. There's going to be a lot of divorce, and there's going to be a lot of people retreating into these drugs when their lives are completely destroyed. I mean, white people have a hard time sitting around and not working. They have a hard time not being creative and productive, and that's kind of where this opioid epidemic is come from, that people don't have meaningful work. And that's what we saw in the Appalachia when the global warming agenda shut down all the coal plants and, you know, other things. But I mean, if you just isolate Appalachia, when they lost all their jobs, they went straight into these opioid drugs. And you're going to see that across the board with the United States, with all people turning these drugs, all white people. So, I mean, I think that the elite, why did they do this? I mean, you end up in, like, you know, super conspiracy territory if you start coming up with detailed plans of why they would do something like this. But I think they wanted a global government. They wanted to eliminate the remaining resistance to that, which, I mean, the global government is already in place. I mean, everything, the structure is all there in the United Nations and in the global banking institutions, as well as, you know, in the EU. It's kind of a model for how to create a global government by federalizing existing countries. And I think that's what they wanted to happen. And I think that this is a way to just push it over the edge into that territory. And when you have a people who have no work, they're being force vaccinated, they don't have any ideas of freedom or purpose without work and with having all their rights taken away in this extremely dehumanizing way. You have a people you can do anything to. And if there is, you know, if there is an agenda, which I think there clearly is, a long-term agenda that has to do with more than making money, then we're watching that being born now in this fire of this flu hoax.
And for Greg, there has been now a lot of talk about a possible second wave of the virus, and that these lockdown measures might actually help such a thing along, because they prolong this epidemic by slowing it down. And it is sort of, even though I personally don't really mind these measures, it is sort of terrifying to realize how our governments don't seem to have a long-term plan, that they don't really seem to know for how long are we supposed to do this if the virus isn't going away, and what sort of trouble are we causing ourselves through these methods. So don't you think there is a problem there, that it is very difficult to make a long-term plan?
Yeah. Long-term planning is one thing that democracies especially don't do very well, because politicians have short terms of office and catastrophes are rare. And so any given politician can basically assume that it's probably not going to happen on his watch. And the only people who can really plan long-term are unelected officials, bureaucrats, right? The so-called deep state, when you really get down to it, you know, the upper level bureaucracies that are supposed to deal with strategic planning and long-term trends, stuff like that. Well, one of the troubles with the United States is we have a deep state, as people now call it, that was so hostile to democracy and especially hostile to the president that we elected last time, that the relationship between him, the Donald Trump, and these senior government officials were very strained. He didn't trust these people, and for good reason. He found them lying. He found them spying, and so on and so forth. So again, we're paying the cost in America of just the corruption and the political corruption, the political polarization of these people who are supposed to be somewhat nonpartisan, think long term, advise the government about long term trends, prepare us for possibilities like pandemics. It's very, very unfortunate. But yet, it's very possible that there will be a rebound of this, especially if it was ineffective. The mitigation measures that we have already put in place have been ineffective. But however, right, if we do have effective mitigation, it probably won't rebound. So we're sort of stuck in a trap at this point. There's a huge amount of pressure in the United States to take off these mitigation measures because of political and cultural reasons. And if the government gives into that, and you can already see Trump pandering to this, liberate Michigan and stuff like that. Here's the guy who's in charge of protecting the country. He's the chief executive of the country. And he is at the same time encouraging people who are trying to resist and roll back the mitigation measures that he should be protecting. It's just an appalling, absurd situation. If we are pressured in the United States to pull back on these things prematurely, it's going to spike again. And our country is just dysfunctional and dumb enough that that could happen. I hope it doesn't happen, but I'm not very optimistic.
Well, 21% of people have it in New York City. There's no going back from that, or have had it. They have the antibodies. So you're already at herd immunity at that point. I mean, you're already there. So the measures to prevent people from getting it never made any sense. We don't do this with any virus. The plan to prevent people from getting it is just was dumb to begin with, and everybody got it anyway. So, I mean, will there be a resurgence? We don't have any idea. I mean, the flu comes every year, and like I said, these numbers are the same as the flu. So, and all flu deaths are being included as coronavirus deaths as per the CDC guidance released on, I think it was March 12th or March 16th, maybe. Anyway, the CDC told all hospitals to record. And I know a guy who's a doctor who showed me the paper that he got. They're telling people to report any death that could be from coronavirus as coronavirus. So, you know, if they can say that it's resurging when it's just the flu, and they're going to, obviously, because they're trying to inflate the deaths now. They want to keep everybody locked down, and they're obsessed with this vaccine. What's in the vaccine? What is this? This has all become just like a science fiction nightmare. They are going to put computer chips in people.
Well, the It's not just the flu, okay? And we can't compare it to a flu season.
Because it has the same outcome as the flu. We've seen the outcome now, and it is the same as the flu.
But listen, a normal flu season does not have these kinds of radical mitigation efforts. And the number of dead is approaching the worst flu season that we've had in record in recent years, and will probably surpass that if we keep the death rate at 29%, which doesn't seem like it's going to be dropping off. So we're probably going to have 300,000 dead people, and that's even if nobody gets any new infections, which is not likely. So this is 300,000 people or more. That's several times larger than the worst flu season, with mitigation measures that we never had during any flu season. And just having the mitigation measures means that the two outcomes can't really be compared.
Well, they can if say Sweden didn't lock down and New York had the biggest lockdown of any place in the world, and somehow New York ended up with four times per capita deaths than Sweden. And that happened. I mean, this is a fact. Like I say, all this stuff about theories and concepts, ideas, doesn't really matter. What matters is the actual data and the numbers. And we have those now. I mean, I could understand when people were freaking out at the beginning because of how the media was framing it, and saying, you know, that all these people were going to die and that young people were going to die, even though we knew since Wuhan, since the initial, we knew that, you know, if you're under 60, you have like virtually no chance at all of dying from the virus. So we've always known that, but the media spun it. I can understand that people were freaking out, but we have the numbers now, and we know that the case fatality rate is the same as the flu. So, I mean, we know it's infectious. It's apparently very infectious. If 21% of people in New York City have it, but the actual death rate is relatively low, and to allow people to build up the immunity to the virus would have been the logical course of action here. But that seems to have happened anyway, because the measures that they employed were so ineffective.
I guess the real question is, are these measures ineffective? If you radically reduce the amount of contact between people, you are radically decreasing infections. That's the simple basic rule of how this works. And since infections do spread, they double, they do spread dramatically, even a little bit, a small percentage of decrease in interactions between people can, you know, months and weeks out, result in dramatically decreased sickness. So I think that we've dodged a bullet here, in probably because people started isolating and did so effectively. And it's unfortunately the case that in the United States, but not in other countries, we've also given ourselves a massive economic depression that's going to be lasting a very, very long time after this virus is history.
I don't know that. I mean, you can talk about mitigation, this working in theory, that in theory, if you're not around anybody, but you are around people in this lockdown at the supermarket, and you're locked in your house with people breathing recirculated air. And these buildings in New York, okay, the venting system goes from, it goes into the hallway. Some of them go to apartment to apartment with air venting. Okay, so that's why 21% of New York City is infected. Has been infected, has antibodies for the virus. So that doesn't sound to me like very effective lockdown quarantine measures. If a fifth of the population gets infected, that doesn't sound effective to me.
Yeah. It probably could have been a lot worse. That's all I can say. It would have been worse if people had not distance themselves and broken the routes of person to person transmission. Well, I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people in New York. I've been fretting about them, right? And I talk to them, and I know people who are very sociable people who haven't gone out in more than a month to do anything but shop. I know people who regularly went to classes, regularly went to offices to work and things like that. They've been working at home or not working at all. They've not been socializing, not been eating in restaurants and stuff like that. That dramatically decreases the opportunities for viral transmission, and they still are at 21%. I think it would have been a lot worse if people had not been isolating themselves. And that's just the basic rules of how any disease spreads. If you interrupt interpersonal contacts, you interrupt the spread of the disease.
Okay, so it's 1/5 of people are infected. If 100% of people would have, 1/5 of people infected, you have 15,000 dead. If 100% of people would have been infected, that means you would have had 75,000 dead, and the thing would have been over. It just would have been over. That would have been it. You'd be finished, and we could all move on with our lives. So if I don't know that 21% of people could have gotten infected if you would have done no lockdown. I think the lockdown caused a higher infection rate, as I've said. But if it would have been 100%, if you would have just let people go about their lives, 75,000 people would have died, and it would have been finished. Okay, and then we would have the immunity among the people, and we could just move on. We wouldn't have an economic collapse. So are more than 75,000 people going to die in New York as a result of this lockdown? And I would say absolutely. And when you consider the fact that over half of those people are extremely elderly, who were going to die, you know, people over 75 who were, you know, waiting for death anyway, probably most of those people, then you just have a situation where you say, what are we doing? I mean, any angle that you come at this, it becomes insane of just like, what have we done? Why did we destroy our entire society? I mean, in Europe, they said that half of the deaths are in actual nursing homes. So how old do you have to be to go there? I think, you know, you don't go before 80. So half of the deaths are in nursing homes. They're not releasing this information from New York. But, you know, it affects very old people. So if you wanted to do, you could have done a quarantine, like an Ebola style quarantine of only very old people, people over 80 and people with, you know, serious illnesses that are getting ready to die anyway, I guess with morbidly obese people and with people with compromised immune systems, you could have just quarantined them and it wouldn't have cost, you know, $50 trillion or whatever. I mean, again, the number of how much money they print is going to be irrelevant because it's going to be worth less as they print more of it. But, you know, you could have put those people in a real quarantine for a lot less money than this is costing and, you know, just let everybody else go on with their lives. I mean, if you're under 60, you have pretty much a 0% chance of dying of this virus.
And I could pick up some research data that has been on the news a lot lately, and it's about the antibodies people develop for this disease and the herd immunity theory. And it's important to this debate because it's a sort of a bad thing for both of your viewpoints because it has now been found that there are a lot of cases of people who have had the coronavirus, but even after the they show negative test results for the virus itself, they show no results or negative results for antibodies. And even some of those people who have the antibodies in their system after the disease have fallen ill again. So that is sort of gloomy when it comes to the herd immunity theory, that it seems that not all people who have had the coronavirus are even immune to it. And it's also a bad thing when it comes to developing vaccines, because if even having the disease in a natural way doesn't necessarily make you immune, it usually means that the vaccines are not going to be that effective either. So in a way, it goes against the herd immunity theory, but also it goes against the lockdown measures and defending them, because then you can raise the question that what are we waiting for under lockdown if no herd immunity is coming, if no effective vaccination is coming? So what are we hunkering down to wait for if no such thing are going to come to us?
Yeah, I think that the virologists are probably exaggerating the idea that people can get it again after they get it. That's always possible, and it's especially possible when it's a different strand. You can get a different strand. But even if you get it again, if you have the immunities, because what the immunities are, that doesn't just mean you can't get infected at all. It means that you have the just in simple terms, it's that your body has the ability to fight it. You know, you're prepared to fight the virus if you have the immunities already. So, you know, the idea that somebody would get it really bad and recover and then get it again and not recover is incredibly unlikely. I do think that the immunities, I mean, every virus works the same way as far as this goes. I mean, if your body fights off a virus, it learns how to respond to that virus. And, you know, some diseases you can get again. The seasonal influenza, it's always different. The flu, as I said earlier, you know, it changes every year when it goes dormant. So you can get it again, but your body is more ready to fight back against it. I mean, there are some, like, the first time I was ever in the tropics, I got hepatitis A, which is like the worst nightmare. And that's something you can only get once. There are some viruses that you only get once, but most of them, you just build the immunities, which makes it easier to fight off. If you get it again, and a lot of the time the immunities are strong enough that you don't even know that you've been exposed to it, because your body immediately attacks it, because viruses are not, they're not actually an organism like bacteria. They're a weird, they actually have arguments of whether or not they're even a form of life. They're like a molecular robot. So your body has to learn how to respond to them, because they attack very, very weirdly, unlike bacteria, which something that we evolved to deal with. Viruses, we don't really know where they came from. I do believe that immunity is immunity, and that this will be the same no matter what. But as to your point of when, what we're waiting for and when we're going to open up, that's what they appear to be doing, is coming up with reasons why we'll stay locked down forever. I mean, people forget now. People absolutely forget that the reason for the lockdown was to prevent hospitals from being overwhelmed. That's the reason they told us. And then it turned into what it is now, which is that we have to get rid of 100% of infections.
Right.
So because hospitals are not overwhelmed.
Well, there were hospitals being overwhelmed in Spain and in Italy, and people dying in hospitals and in hallways, and that was a reasonable concern. And I don't see any problem with that. Let me read some of these super chats. I apologize. I found a whole cache of them here. So let me just run through them really quick. Most of them are just statements, and I just want to thank these people. Ivan writes, Greg, you've cited 29% mortality rate, yet places that undertook random antibody testing can extrapolate much lower figures. How do you square this discrepancy? I'm not sure what to make of that. Drumpf writes in, does Mr. Greg Johnson trust people like Fauci, who funded the Wuhan virology lab that studied and potentially released the coronavirus, or does he trust the WHO that denied human transmission? I don't trust anybody without looking into what they have to, if there's basis. I don't take anything on trust from anybody. Okay. I try and use my head.
We have to go with the science on everything. You have to go with the science and not trust these experts, because they've proven not to be trustworthy, and they've also proven to have some kind of agenda, which for a lot of the virologists is just getting research grants, because it's like the global warming people, you know.
Right.
I mean, they always want this money, and they'll come up with anything they can to get this money. But yeah, right. Go ahead.
Stuart writes, Anglin, you're the voice of God. Keep it up, brother. Everyone throw some crypto shekels his way. Drumpf writes in again, do I trust people like Fauci? He sent this twice, so we've answered that already. Stuart writes, Greg, how do you imagine dying of COVID-19 is worse than dying of starvation brought about by the breakdown of supply chains? I think that just sounds like panic and extremism, and economic panicism. You're just as dead no matter how you die. I will say that. But the very, the, yeah, The same people who accused me of being panicked about the virus then used this panic terminology, this panic rhetoric about the economy. Ivan writes in.
Can I comment on that? Is the government capable of getting us food? I mean, now everything relies on the government now. There is no more private enterprise that's going to be able to do these things. So it's all going to be down to the government. We've surrendered total control. So we have to trust these people to feed us now. And I mean, right now they're saying that there's going to be an outage of meat, a supply, because the supply chain is broken, that there's going to be a shortage of fresh meat by next week. So, I mean, how long till the frozen meat is gone? And then we're eating rice or canned soup or something. This could really spin out of control, is all I'll say. I mean, I don't know if it's going to get to the point of starvation. I tend to think no, but it's going to get really bad, and it might get to the point where there's no meat and we have to eat soy or bugs or something.
Right. This is Ivan Anglin. You've said there's evidence of the virus being genetically engineered and now say the virus is not particularly novel. Has your viewpoint on the lab origin changed, or can both claims be true?
Both claims could be true, but yeah, I did in the initial phases, it looked to me like it was potentially an engineered virus that was released against the Chinese. But now I'm starting to think that's not true. And if it was released, then it's just this lockdown agenda was the purpose of it. It wasn't to kill a bunch of people. And I mean, you know, when you see Bill Gates, I mean, his whole thing, you wouldn't be surprised if this was an engineered plan. They didn't keep it to be, they didn't make it extremely deadly so that they themselves wouldn't die from it, and it didn't need to be because they could just go crazy with it. But I tend to not think it was bioengineered. I think it's just a virus that they decided to play up.
Okay. Stuart writes, you're ignoring all of Anglin's points. I guess this is addressed to me. Please address his points of a much lower death rate. I don't know what to say about that. I'm skeptical. Okay. I'm looking at what's that?
But it's, I mean, the tests are done. We know.
I'm also hearing all kinds of claims about false positives and defective test kits and things like that. I'm just not sure we can draw that conclusion yet. But we do have pretty accurate statistics about how many people go into the hospital, how many come out dead, and how many come out alive. And of course, the ones who are alive for now, and there may be a lot of long-term consequences because these bodies, people's bodies, have often been absolutely shattered. Their kidneys, their liver, a lot of these people are going to be on dialysis. If you go into the hospital with this, your chances of surviving this are about, well, you know, basically 3 in 10 people seem to be dying if it gets bad enough to go into the hospital. And that's
90% of people on ventilators die. 90%. If you go on a ventilator, you have a 90% chance of dying. So yeah, I mean, it does, but that's, you know, we have to look at the total numbers like we do with the flu or any other virus. And the total numbers of infected are 50 times the number of people that go to the hospital. I mean, if every person that got infected was going to the hospital, we would have a very different situation here. So I do think we have to go with the science and the numbers.
I don't know what the numbers are, but Tina asked earlier, what would count as evidence that would change my mind about the severity of this? If I found out with accurate testing that, yes, the mortality rate of this was vanishingly small, then I think that when it comes back next year, the response is obviously not going to be shutting down. And I said this in an essay called "I'm Changing My Tune About Coronavirus." There will come a point where we do have to open things up again. And at that point, it will also be the case that coronavirus will be part of the new normal. And there are a certain number of people that will die of it every year. I think that, you know, that's going to happen. And at that point, the people who are going to be screeching that you care more about the economy than human life, it's just going to pass over into being empty rhetoric. But there is definitely a point of saying that at the beginning, when these people were saying, it's just the flu, bro, without any basis. In fact, it's not just the flu. Not because they were basing it on science, not because they were basing it on, you know, moral philosophy, but because they were basing it on their concern to keep the economy going along, because these were the people at the top invested in it and getting rich from it, or the president who basically wanted to just treat this like the flu because he didn't want to panic the shoppers. He was betting his reelection on a good economy. That, I think, is clearly a case of just evil. These people are evil. But there will come a point where this will become part of the new normal. I hope it's not going to be as bad every year in the future, but there will come a point. Now, there's so many other people. Let me just run through this.
Okay,
go ahead.
Some people would say that completely destroying the economy and everybody losing their jobs and millions of homeless and, you know, untold deaths from suicide and drug overdose and no future for children, that is evil. So I don't think it's fair to say that the people who were saying that this was just the flu or that what we shouldn't lock down have an evil agenda. Dr. John Ayandis from Stanford University, who is one of the premier medical authorities in the country, you know, he said everything that I've said about this. I mean, he said it in March after I had said it, and I was shocked to go and listen to this guy just saying everything that I had said about this virus. So people can watch him on YouTube. You spell his name Ioannidis. But, you know, I don't think that we can say that anybody who disagreed with the lockdown had evil purposes, because I think there is a humanitarian argument on the other side for not destroying the country.
Right. Okay. Kelvin says, you've muted everyone who have donated via DLive, Greg. Sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. 1001 just sends in $10. Thank you. Kelvin says, muting your detractors doesn't mean you win, Greg. It just puts you on the par with TRS, whatever. Ryan writes, Gates and Fauci will make a lot of money from a vaccine. Gates is worth $100 billion. I doubt that he's very, and he gives billions of dollars away. I doubt that his real motivation here is money. The pharmaceutical companies benefit greatly from the pandemic, the plandemic. Yeah. Anyway, in Michigan, the FBI raided a clinic for giving people intravenous vitamin C. Go ahead. Do you want to comment on that?
On which thing?
Gates and Fauci will make a lot of money. Pharmaceutical benefit.
Yeah. Gates seems to have a weird agenda. I mean, he on Good Friday, and you know, people can say whatever they want about this, but on Good Friday, he released a video through Microsoft of that woman from the Spirit Cooking that's friends with Podesta and does the weird satanic rituals. He released that on Good Friday in the middle of this pandemic. You know, I mean, I think he might have a really weird agenda is all I'll say on that. So I mean, I do agree with your point about, you know, middle management, Wall Street types wanting the system to continue on as it was. But as you said, these technocratic globalist elite have a different agenda.
Yeah. So Ryan writes in again, the Illinois Department of Health said, if you're in a hospice waiting to die and you contract COVID, your death will, okay, it'll be listed as COVID. I don't know if that's true. If it is, obviously these statistics are being inflated. However, also there are people who are dying suddenly of things like strokes at the age of 44, and they're being tested and found that, and then they never went to into a hospital, and they're being tested and found to have COVID. So the numbers could be inflated in both directions, or inflated or deflated. I just think that, again, we don't know enough about this yet. And so, if people are classifying deaths that are not COVID as COVID, it's disinformation. Or claiming that they're doing this might be disinformation. The meme saying that if people, you know, commit suicide and are being, you know, said to die of coronavirus, that's disinformation. That's bullshit.
Well, the CDC ordered in a guidance that they issued on, I think, March 12th or March 16th, that if there's any reason to believe that somebody died of the coronavirus, you're supposed to record their death as coronavirus, even in absence of a test. So they are doing that. How much that's affecting the numbers, I don't know, because the numbers are still pretty low, but they are trying to inflate the numbers for their own purposes.
Does Mr. Johnson trust somebody like Fauci? Okay, I've answered this question, but thank you for sending another $3 in. The CDC sent out pamphlets encouraging doctors to diagnose as dead from COVID without testing. Yeah, okay, we just heard that. Kelvin writes in, donate directly to Daily Stormer if you agree with Anglin. Please do, definitely do that. The Daily Stormer needs your support. Faithon writes, Mr. Anglin, please make a speech like your London Forum speech, maybe. You're a great writer, Mr. Johnson. Thanks for keeping at this and enjoying your White Nationalist Manifesto recommended. Thank you both. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Ghoster writes in, Ghoster Oven. I guess that's not his real name, so I haven't doxed anybody. Do you think the over-the-top response from media, big business, and politicians implies the pandemic was planned or an ad hoc coordination rush to take advantage of the situation? Do you want to answer that first, Andrew?
Can you repeat it? Sorry.
Do you think the over-the-top reaction was planned out or just sort of an ad hoc panic reaction to the pandemic?
Well, I think for most people, it was ad hoc. Definitely for the media. Maybe some of them got a directive. Maybe Zuckerberg got a directive. But I think for most of them, I think it has a lot to do with Donald Trump. I think they really hate Donald Trump, and this was viewed as something that would prevent him from getting reelected. So I think that's a big part of it. I think with Gates and these other people, you know, when you're talking about the people who are at the top, I think it was planned. I don't know if they knew about this virus or if they were just planning to do this with any new virus that came along. I don't know. I mean, nobody knows. So it almost gets silly to speculate on that level, I think. But I think that there is clearly an agenda here that's not just being that existed before, you know, before January 2020. I think that this is a plan and they have steps, just like with the Patriot Act was already written long before 9/11 happened. I think it's a similar situation where they're rolling out an agenda in response to, you know, what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Drumpf writes in, what do you think of the role of 5G in the COVID deaths? I don't know if there is any role of 5G in the COVID deaths. What about you, Andrew?
Some of that stuff seems like these conspiracy theories that get like really kooky, that they seem to be put out there in order to discredit certain other narratives. I mean, you get that a lot with stuff where people come out with these narratives that don't really make any sense, and they push those, you know, they're allowed on Facebook, they're allowed everywhere else on the internet, on YouTube in particular, and they're kind of to distract from people who are saying other things that disagree with the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. That's exactly how I would say it. Stuart writes in, I know personally farmers are dumping milk because that trucks are no longer coming to pick it up. What do you make of that, Greg? This is what happens when you have economic supply chain discoordination.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to get a lot worse. And when they say, okay, everyone can go back to work, they're going to find that certain parts don't work anymore. Certain people aren't doing things anymore. You know, you can't just reopen your coffee shop because you can't get the stuff that you had for the coffee shop, and on and on and on. The modern economies are extremely fragile, and you can't just put them on pause and then unpause them and they just come right back up. It's just not the way it works.
No.
So that's the entropy chats that I've got. So maybe some others will come in. We've been going at it for about 2 hours. I think we should probably wrap up now. Andrew, do you want to say a few words? And then I'll say a few words, and then we'll thank everyone and call it a good discussion.
Okay, did you get all the DLive super chats?
MCM donated a diamond, thank you. Punish Protestant donated a diamond, thank you. The elites have all the money they need, straw man. Robert donated an ice cream. Robert donated a diamond. Zionists don't care about money, they can print it. Tommy donated an ice cream. MCM donated a diamond. Okay, Trunks donated an ice cream. MCM, another diamond. Robert, a diamond. Watch the YouTube video of Dr. Erickson. Okay, I apologize. I just totally bungled this. This is my first time through it. JR donated a Ninjagini. Okay, thank you very much. G8 did a lemon. MCM donated another diamond. MCM donated a diamond. There aren't any questions or comments from most of these. Robert did a diamond. Search Dr. Erickson press conference. Robert, another diamond. We have lockdown versus no lockdown data. Robert, a diamond. You quarantine the sick, not the healthy. Robert, quarantining the healthy diminishes immunity. Robert, another diamond. No, it isn't quarantine of the healthy. Robert donated a diamond, actually increases the danger. Okay, we're lacking a little context, but I think I know what you're talking about. MCM, a diamond. TNT, some kind of, okay, it's a Ninjagini. Need a full restatement of debate arguments to draw a conclusion. MCM donated ice cream and a lemon. Hate Engine donated a diamond. Thank you all for these donations as I run through them. Pampu donated a diamond, Tapio a diamond, GB99 an ice cream, and When We Win Remember donated a lemon, and Happy Merchant just donated an ice cream, and that's it. So I apologize for not seeing all this at first, but hey, I'm new to this technology. So thank you very much, everybody.
Yeah, and it's normal that you don't see all of them. If you open the activity feed in the middle of the stream, then you only see what has happened since you opened it.
Right. Yeah, so I went back to the top. Robert just donated another diamond. DLive only allows 50 characters with donation. Okay, so that's that. Andrew, do you want to say something to wrap up? And then I'll just say a couple words and we'll say goodbye.
Yeah, I'll just say that I'm not a virus denier. I totally, you know, accept that this is a disease and that people are dying from it. And I, you know, if you know somebody who's died, you know, I don't want to come across as callous. I don't want to come across as callous when talking about old people are dying. I sympathize. And my position here is about the number of people who are going to suffer as a result of this being greater than the number who would theoretically have suffered if we had not done this lockdown. So I don't want to sound like I'm just saying, well, the only thing that matters is money, because, you know, I think that whole thing of the economy is just money or just the stock market or whatever is kind of not something people are saying anymore. But just to be clear, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not, you know, taking some libertarian perspective here. And I do care about people, and I don't want to see anybody die, even old people, or fat people or whatever. So I do care. But I just think that a lot more people are going to suffer as a result of these measures that we've implemented. And I think that we need to consider that when we're saying not one death. And I just want to thank you, Greg, for doing this. I'm really glad that somebody that, holds your position was willing to come out here and talk. It's very, very good to have this chat. And I guess we're just going to see who's right about this in the next few months.
Yeah, well, I have enjoyed this too. I hope that we can do other things like this in the future, maybe when it's not like some terrible global pandemic where people are dying or the economy is dying or both. Maybe there'll be happier occasions where we can have debates too. But I've enjoyed this. We've done this once before years ago with Tara McCarthy. We've always gotten along doing these sorts of things. And I appreciate Tina and Eunice for coming in at the last moment and helping out when Millennial Woes couldn't do it. I appreciate all of you out there for bearing with me as I fumble around with new technology. And I especially thank the people who made donations. It really does help out. The economic situation affects us all. So if you're making donations, each platform gets their take, and then what's left over, Andrew and I are going to split 50-50. So thank you very much, everyone, for helping out.
Yeah, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity to moderate. This was something completely new to me and a very interesting discussion to follow for myself, because I, of course, am a very certain centrist when it comes to this coronavirus, that I'm very careful not to make predictions because I just don't really think we can know for certain anything at this point. So I'm just trying to gather information and follow what's going on. So this has been very interesting to hear both points of view so well put by you guys.
Well, thank you. And I want to remind everyone, please subscribe to Tina and Eunice's channel. Please subscribe to the Countercurrents DLive channel. Please visit Countercurrents. Please visit Daily Stormer. Please support all the people who made this possible. Thank you.
Yeah, and just a reminder for the people that if they want more of me, in less than 3 hours at 9 p.m. CET, we will begin our tonight's out-of-line show with Ed Dutton, and we will be talking about his book, which is about the grooming gang crisis in Finland. So that's at 9 p.m. CET, so just a bit less than 3 hours. But I thank you, gentlemen, for a very interesting discussion.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Well, yeah. I'm going to sign off then. Thanks, everyone. Oh, one last thing. I'm going to do this again with JF on his channel at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Good luck.
Yeah, well, this is just a warm-up, and I'm going to be doing this again a bit later this very day. So thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, and goodbye.